Morning. We're going to start off talking this morning about something somewhat uncharacteristic, I think, of most sermons and most preachers. We're going to talk about pet peeves. I have one particular pet peeve, and that is concerning the Bible, actually. And it is chapter and verse divisions. So often, I am studying through my Bible, and I come to a chapter or a verse division and say, why is that there? Because this is obviously a man-made construct. I don't think Paul was sitting there writing his epistle to the Romans saying, okay, chapter 1. So this is something that man has put together, and there are all kinds of reasons why chapters and verses of the Bible are divided up the way they are. This morning, we're going to talk about why the first three verses of Hebrews 12 actually belong in Hebrews 11. Our topic this morning is going to be a little bit more in-depth than that, of course. But we are going to mention here how it's going to be somewhat of a study between Hebrews 11 and 12. I do apologize if the font is somewhat small this morning. But hopefully you'll understand why I had to fit a lot onto one slide, and hopefully you'll understand why. But this is ultimately what we're going to be talking about this morning, fixing our eyes on Jesus as it applies to Hebrews 11, which is something interesting because Jesus isn't mentioned in Hebrews 11. But ultimately, I think there is a particular reason why chapter 12, as Devin read for us this morning, the first three verses that we're going to start here in Hebrews chapter 12, and then we're going to go back and read through Hebrews 11. Therefore, chapter 12, verse 1 of Hebrews, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. Back in Hebrews 11, this is what we typically, Christians typically call this chapter, the Hall of Faith. It shows us many characters in the Bible who by faith did certain things. And ultimately, what the Hebrew writer is doing is he is setting up these great people of faith to then say, don't you fear what's coming. Don't be afraid and feel like you have to desert the covenant of God that you have. Which is ultimately what the end of verse 3 of chapter 12 said, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So here I want us to go through fairly quickly some of what it describes to us that the faithful of Hebrews 11 have done. So let's start in verse 4. In the first three verses, the writer of Hebrews talks about faith and what it is and how important it is. But here he starts in verse 4 with Abel. And he says, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts. And through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. So by faith, he offered a better sacrifice. So I know the font is small, but I'll be going through these points very clearly with you, so hopefully we'll keep up with them. So by faith, Abel offered a better sacrifice. That's the first point that we read here. He offered a better sacrifice than Cain. And it says, though he is dead, he still speaks. So Abel offered a better sacrifice. Verse 5, We're going to read verses 5 and 6 together. They're somewhat important as a unit. By faith, Enoch was taken up so that he would not see death. And he was not found because God took him up. That's Genesis chapter 5. For he obtained the witness that before his being taken up, he was pleasing to God. And without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who seek him. So we see that Enoch was pleasing to God. So Abel offered a better sacrifice, and Enoch was pleasing to God. Verse 7, by faith, Noah, being warned by God about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. So Noah prepared an ark for salvation. That is what he did by faith. Prepared an ark for salvation. Verse 8. By faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, dwelling in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise. For he was looking for the city which has foundations, whose architect and builder is God. So by faith, Abraham went out. By faith, he went out to a place that he was to receive for an inheritance. It also says that he dwelt in a tent. The faithful are dwelling in tents, in temporary structures, if you will. Let's look at verse 11. By faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead as that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. So we see that Sarah, first of all, considered him faithful. I think that's an important point here. Considered him faithful who had promised. And it also says that through her, that she conceived many descendants. And he quotes, the Hebrew writer quotes here Genesis 22, that they would be as the stars of heaven in number and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. And then he takes a break here for 14, 15, and 16. And he says, for those who say, back up to verse 13 through 16, all these died in faith, without receiving the promises, but having seen them and having welcomed them from a distance and having confessed that they were strangers and exiles on the earth. For those who say such things make it clear they are seeking a country of their own. And indeed, if they had been thinking of that country from which they went out, they would have had opportunity to return. But as it is, they desire a better country, that is, a heavenly one. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. And so the Hebrew writer takes a small aside here and talks to us about faith and how these people didn't receive the final promises, but that didn't matter to them because they knew they were coming. So you could say that by faith they waited for the promises. But continuing on in 17, we see Abraham is brought back up. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he whom it was said, in Isaac your descendants shall be called. He considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead, from which he received him back as a type. And so here we see two things. First of all, he considered God's ability to resurrect. And then as it said of Abel, he offered up his son. But I think the more important one here is that he considered God able to resurrect his son. That's why he was so willing to take him to the cross. We understand that human sacrifice was something that God has never been okay with. And even at the time of Abraham and Isaac, God had already given his disapproval of such practices. It must have been somewhat strange for Abraham to do so. But here, even though it doesn't tell us back in Genesis, here the Hebrew writer tells us he was so willing to do this because he knew God promised me Isaac, so he must be able to raise him from the dead. Otherwise, he wouldn't ask me to do this. And sure enough, God stops him from killing Isaac. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau, even regarding things to come. By faith, Jacob, as he was dying, blessed each of the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning on the top of his staff. And so we see that the faithful bless others as Isaac and Jacob did. And to round out this first column here, we stop at Joseph. By faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the exodus of the sons of Israel and gave orders concerning his bones. And so Joseph gave orders concerning his body, and it says he did this by faith. He knew that God was going to bring his promise about to take them to the land that they were to own, the land that he had showed their forefather Abraham. And so he said, when you leave, take my bones with you. And so now we've gone through the first 22 verses of Hebrews and have only gotten through Genesis. I think we've got to speed up the process here just a little bit. So the Hebrew writer starts with Exodus. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child and they were not afraid of the king's edict. So verse 23 is actually about Moses' parents, about Amram and Jochebed. It says that they hid him, but notice the key phrase here. They hid him for a reason. They were not afraid of the king's edict. They didn't listen to the king because they had faith in God, and they weren't going to do this horrible thing of killing their child, and they weren't going to let anybody else do it either. Now we actually get to Moses. Moses is, first of all, he's the one that we see the most here. He has the most verses dedicated to him. So let's start in verse 24. We're going to be going through verse 29. By faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. By faith, he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, like his parents, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith, he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned. So here we have a few things. First of all, he gave up the rich life that he had, being Pharaoh's, being the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Then it says that he chose to endure ill treatment than the passing pleasures of sin. He considered reproach greater than riches. Notice he says, for he was looking to the reward. Then it says that he endured. Notice that he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. That's who he was focused on. He was focused on God. And lastly, he saved people from the destroyer. In fact, there's one more. I said last one. He saved people from the destroyer, the angel of death who came to destroy the firstborn. And then saved from the enemy by passing through the Red Sea. Moving on to the book of Joshua. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they had been encircled for 7 days. You see, the faithful were destroying barriers because of God and because of their faith. By faith, Rahab the harlot did not perish along with those who were disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. And so we see that did not die as one of the disobedient ones. And then verse 32, we see the Hebrew writer just has to give up. He can't get through the entire Bible filled with faithful people. So he says, what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David and Samuel and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions. Whoa, that did not work properly, but there we go. We have all the rest of the list here. Quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Others were tortured, not accepting their release so they might obtain a better resurrection. And others experienced mockings and scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two. They were tempted, they were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins, in goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated, wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. I always want to skip that and come back to the beginning of 38. Men of whom the world was not worthy. And that's why I wanted to put that at the end of the list. The world is not worthy of these faithful people. Then he finishes out 39 and 40. All these, having gained approval through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they would not be made perfect. Therefore, notice how important this therefore is. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. This is the race. That's what this is. Running with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, I believe the New King James says, of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You see, all these people here were focused. They were focused on Christ, and they were focused on the promise to come. But I want you to notice, and maybe if you were already looking, the grand reveal was ruined probably for some of you. These are all representative of Jesus himself. Jesus offered himself, being the better sacrifice, the best sacrifice. He was pleasing to God. He had prepared a vessel for our salvation. He was going out to a foreign land, coming down here to be among humans, dwelling in a temporary dwelling. Jesus considered him faithful, that being his Father, faithful to bring everything that he had promised. And through Jesus, as it says, that through one man conceived many descendants, as innumerable as the stars of heaven and the sand of the seashore. Jesus considered God's ability to resurrect him after 3 days. Jesus blessed others. He gave us orders concerning his body, some of which we have already done this morning. I was afraid that Wayne was going to take my thunder this morning. He gave us orders concerning his body. He was not afraid of any of the rulers that tried to stand in his way. He gave up being one of the Godhead in heaven. I think that's a little bit more than Moses giving up being the son of Pharaoh's daughter. He chose to endure ill treatment and considered reproach greater than the riches of this life. And it says that he endured, Jesus endured, seeing him who is unseen. And he saved us from the destroyer. Many times it tells us that he was saved from the enemy. Times where the Pharisees decided they were going to kill him. And they were going to lay hands on him. And it says that he would slip away unseen. Multiple times Jesus was saved from the enemy so that he would be killed at the proper time. He destroyed the barriers, particularly being sin, the barrier that most importantly separates us from God. Now, this one was a little tricky. He did not die as one who was disobedient. What Isaiah 53 tells us is that he did die counted among them. He had thieves on either side of him, but he was not found with sin in his soul when he did die. He conquered kingdoms. Ultimately, we see that most importantly in the vision that Daniel had. The stone made without hands, crushing the statue, showing the kingdoms that would come after Daniel's time and during Daniel's time. Performed righteousness, obtained promises. I like this one. Shut the mouth of the lion. Here in Hebrews it says, shut the mouths of lions, particularly thinking about Daniel, but there's one lion that we need to worry about most, and Jesus has shut his mouth. Quenched the power of fire. We don't have to worry about hell anymore. That fear has been quenched for us. Again, he escaped death just like being saved from the enemy until the proper time. Made strong in his weakness. Coming down and being weak, being human, being found in this body ultimately gave him the strength. He was able to overcome temptation. He was able to overcome his fear of going to the cross. He receives back the dead by spiritual resurrection and eventually will receive back the dead by physical as well. He became a warrior. He is leading the army of God. And at the end, he will lead the final charge and destroy Satan and death once and for all. If you didn't catch the mocked and scourged when we were reading it, hopefully you get it now. He wandered in destitution. It says, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. But the last one, I think, is probably the most important than any of the others. The world is not worthy. The world is not worthy. But ultimately, all of Hebrews 11 is for us. I replaced the faithful of Hebrews 11 with Jesus. Can I replace it with you? Are these things that you can do in faith? sometimes it's hard for us to put ourselves in here. But that doesn't mean that it isn't possible. Because I want you to go back to Hebrews 12, verse 3. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. You see, everything of Hebrews 11 is exemplified in our Savior. And when we see this, when we see that everything Jesus went through, how do we have any way to lose heart? As he says through David in the Psalms, they will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not be weary. They will walk and not faint. Are they who wait upon the Lord. This is ultimately why I think the first three verses of 12 really belong in 11. Because everything of chapter 11 is here in one man. Coincidence? Of course not. Of course, this is not a coincidence. Because ultimately, we are supposed to be modeled after Christ. So is it any surprise that the faithful are also modeled after Christ? Those that we see in the Bible looking to Jesus and looking to the fulfillment of the promise. It says in 26 that Moses considered the reproach of Christ greater. Greater than the riches and the treasures of Egypt. So hopefully now, whenever you go through Hebrews 11, I hope that Jesus stands out to you in every verse. That you see that Jesus is the representation of all the faithful. Jesus was able to go through his life, as short as it was, and live the lives of all the faithful before him. The one difference is that he did it perfectly. And the other difference is he went to his death purposefully. Those other faithful, they found their death in their due course. Jesus sent himself to the cross. And I hope this last one is the one that stands out to you the most. Because sadly, ladies and gentlemen, this applies to us as well. We are not worthy of the sacrifice of Christ. But we have that sacrifice anyway. God has determined that even though we're not worthy, he's going to be gracious. And he's going to love us. And he's going to grant us that sacrifice anyway. Praise God. This morning, you have a chance to become part of the number of Hebrews 11. Being one of the faithful. You get the pleasure of enduring these things. And yes, I said pleasure. Some of these are hard. Choosing to endure ill treatment. Giving up riches. Isn't that sad that those are some of the hardest ones for us on that list? Why are those the hardest? There are so many others that are far more important. And yet we have the pleasure of fighting them. We have the pleasure of following in the footsteps of Christ. And so hopefully, he said, it's 273, I am not ashamed to own my Lord. This is one of those awesome moments where Tim and I did not talk about this. And yet the song will be so poignant this morning. But to join the faithful, God has a process for us. And that process ultimately ends up in baptism, being completely immersed in water. And if you haven't done that yet, you're not one of the faithful. As much as the world might try to convince you otherwise, you are not one of the faithful. If you have done that, if you have been baptized, and you're struggling with these, that's why we're here. We're here to help one another. We're here to help each other find Christ and be like Him. And so we're going to sing these three verses. This song is somewhat short. You don't have much time. Time is always fleeting from us. Take advantage of the time that you have. Come up here and make it right. However it is you need to do that. Whether it's in baptism or whether it's having the family pray for your soul. Either way, come. And as we stand and sing, I'm not ashamed to own my Lord.